2000 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, July 13, 2023. Seven heads of states from African countries, including President Salva Kiir, just ended a one-day summit on Sudan in the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
The territorial integrity of Sudan, the sovereignty of the Sudanese nation, should be preserved as we are discussing the issue of conflict resolution.
And some successful female South Sudanese traders say they are giving up on their businesses.
The money you've collected today cannot even buy for the things for tomorrow. So this is one of the biggest economic challenges we face in the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir met with heads of state from Chad, Libya, Central African Republic, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Egypt in a one-day summit in Cairo to discuss ways of how to end the ongoing conflict in Sudan. South Sudan's acting foreign minister, Deng Dao Deng, told VOA via telephone from Cairo that the leaders resolved to end the violence in Sudan through negotiating a permanent ceasefire, followed by an inclusive talks to address the root causes of the crisis.
The mechanism, number one, is that the neighboring countries have a very effective role to play, really, in receiving those who are fleeing in the Sudan, and also opening their borders for humanitarian assistance to deliver to Sudan. But also, we have the discussion with that. The territorial integrity of Sudan, the sovereignty of the Sudanese nation, should be preserved as we are discussing the issue of conflict resolution in Sudan. And as we are doing that, we'll be able to address and to resolve the current war in the Sudan, using institutions of the Sudanese and political forces in the Sudan, whether they are inside or outside, to address and to solve the Sudanese problem.
And any takeaways from today's meeting? I mean, you must have been attended it, or you are well informed. Any takeaway from this meeting? Does it look like it's going to really convince the two generals to silence the guns in Sudan?
Well, the most important thing is not about two generals. This is about the nation of Sudan. This is about the Sudanese country. You know, Sudan has not got themselves into this kind of situation before. And this is what has alarmed the neighboring countries, all of them. You know, it is not about, when we make reference to the general, we are missing the real problem. There is a problem in Sudan that needs to be solved, so that the Sudanese themselves can address the problem and to resolve it once and for all. The only way that we can do that is that the leaders, you know, of the Sudan, to be also helping, not to fear, and not to put anything that can increase the suffering of the Sudanese people, but only to give the support wherever necessary, and to give, you know, that particular support to the Sudanese people. So the takeaway is that it's not a new initiative, it is not a new journey. But it is a concern of the neighboring countries that can be built into something that can bring about the lasting peace in Sudan.
Minister Deng, I agree with you that the problem is about Sudan, but the people who started it are the two generals, that is General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo and General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who are now not seeing eye to eye. So, in order to resolve such conflict, they have to be in the equation. Do you agree with me?
Well, at this stage, we cannot, narrow down to them because the war has escalated.
They have covered areas that are far away from Khartoum. They have covered those who are not necessarily part of the war. And it has become very, really very complicated that means, you know, a better understanding than just in order to only see people. Yes, they are very important in solving the problem, in addressing the current Sudanese problem. But we have also discussed that we should not be only confined to two of them, but we should look at the unity of the Sudan, the territorial integrity of the Sudan, and the sovereignty of that country, so that we can be able to address and resolve these particular problems. And of course, they are very important in resolving this particular war.
That's South Sudan's acting foreign minister, Deng Dao Deng, speaking with me from the Egyptian capital, Cairo. We apologize for that poor quality line. Experts say Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces both enjoy foreign support. Neighboring Egypt backs Burhan, while the United Arab Emirates and Russia's Wagner mercenary group support Dagalo's efforts. Previous truce deals have been brokered by Saudi Arabia and the United States, but the East African bloc now seeks to take the lead as both Egypt and Ethiopia push the warring sides to reach an agreement to stop the fighting. Joseph Segley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explains to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashenawi the role of external players in extending the war in Sudan.
Well, it is an ongoing concern, and it's been one of the troubling factors about the Sudan conflict from the beginning. There are many external actors that have interest in Sudan, in addition to Egypt and the United Arab Emirates. You know, there's Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Turkey, and you mentioned Russia. And, you know, there's limited evidence right now that there have been significant flows of weapons or resources from these external actors into Sudan. That's not to say that it isn't happening, but the uncertainty about what other foreign actors might do is ramping up the tensions in the region, and it's creating more incentives for others to jump in lest they get sidelined. And so it really points to the importance of trying to get to a ceasefire and a political settlement sooner rather than later, because the longer this goes on, the more likely it is that some foreign actor is going to jump in, try to take advantage of the situation and tilt things in a way that's going to be beneficial to them and increase tensions elsewhere in the region. And, you know, as part of this, it bears reminding that it's, you know, highly important to bring in the civilian Sudanese actors. They represent the vast majority of Sudanese. This conflict is between two military factions who have very little popular support. So really to find a solution that will be palatable domestically, as well as to be non-threatening to regional actors, you need the civilians to be at the front and center.
Previous truce deals have been brokered by Saudi Arabia and the United States, but the East African bloc now seeks to take the lead, while both Egypt and Ethiopia are trying to have the warring sides meet face-to-face. The U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Molly Fee, traveled to Addis Ababa to meet with the African leaders and Sudanese civilians on how to end the conflict in Sudan. Who can really be an honest broker capable of convincing the two sides that there is no military solution in Sudan?
There's a number of honest brokers out there. Many of the African countries and agencies that are involved in trying to find a resolution, the United Nations, the European actors, the U.S., all of these actors don't pose a territorial threat to Sudan. They're not threatening its sovereignty. So there are plenty of honest brokers that can be a platform. The tougher issue is how to convince the two sides that it's in their interest to find a solution, because each side still believes, and I think this is especially true for Hemeti and the rapid support forces, you know, they believe they can still win militarily, or at least outlast the other in a war of attrition. And by doing so, it risks just further grinding the country into an abyss that will be very hard to pull out of, not to mention all the humanitarian costs that are involved. I think in terms of really convincing Hemeti and the Sudan Armed Forces, it's going to require a collection of voices that are reinforcing the message that there isn't a military victory to be won in Sudan. You know, even if one side were to prevail, it needs to be conveyed that they would not be recognized as the new sovereign representative in Sudan. It needs to be reiterated that, you know, the military did not enjoy the support and confidence of international actors prior to the conflict. So it's not going to come after they've taken the country down this path. And it's that international investment, that donor support, that debt relief, that's what's going to stabilize Sudan's economy and help it really regain some sort of normal status. And, you know, the military just doesn't have any credibility on that front. So I think, you know, that message needs to be reinforced from all international actors. I think the UAE, some of the Gulf states have a particularly important role here to make that point known that, you know, even though they may be supportive one side or the other, that it's really in the interest of those individuals, of the factions and the region, for both sides to seek some sort of negotiated settlement. And until they do, you know, they should be isolated and not receive any support politically in terms of weapons or resources.
That was Joseph Sigley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. Uganda's government has dismissed claims that top officials, including President Yoweri Museveni and his son, were responsible for torturing opponents. The International Criminal Court this week received testimonies from hundreds of Ugandans claiming they were tortured by officials. A government spokesman called it attention-seeking propaganda. Esa Lima Thumani reports from the Kampala.
Uganda's opposition party, the National Unity Platform, says they want justice for people who allege they were tortured by the Ugandan government. Speaking to VOA, NUP spokesman Joel Senyonyi said the party supports the many Ugandans who have provided testimonies in a case being presented to the International Criminal Court against top government officials. The case was recently presented by Bruce Afran, a Princeton, New Jersey-based lawyer whose team gathered the testimonies. The accusations stem from Uganda's 2021 elections. After the elections, several video clips shared on social media allegedly showed security officials torturing and in some cases firing live bullets at protesters. 54 people were killed during the campaign period, mostly in clashes between police and protesters after authorities stopped President Museveni's challenger, opposition leader Bobi Wine, from campaigning in eastern Uganda. A number of NUP activists were also arrested. President Museveni condemned the killings but stated that some terrorists had been killed. Senyonyi says the president's words showed that he was responsible for the arrests and torture.
After that statement that he made, who has been called to order? How many people have been taken to jail or to court for torturing Ugandans? Two, he's the same person after the Arua incident. He said this Bobi Wine and others, they were beaten properly, clearly showing he is the one who commanded all of this.
In August 2018, while campaigning for an opposition candidate in Arua district, Wine narrowly escaped death when the driver of his car was shot and killed. The shooting happened after opposition supporters allegedly stormed the president's vehicle. Among those who have given testimony in the case submitted to the ICC's writer, Kakwenza Rukirabashaija, M70 critic who fled Uganda shortly after his third arrest. After his release, Rukirabashaija posted pictures of his scarred body, saying he had been tortured and a pair of pliers used to pluck not just his nails, but the skin between his thighs. Rukirabashaija says the president's son, General Mhozi Kainerugaba, visited him in prison and was responsible for the torture. The writer's lawyer is Aaron Kiza.
Yeah, Kakuyeza is sure that Muhoozi did torture him, and it is clear that he supervised and ordered that torture.
Farouk Chirunda, Museveni's deputy presidential press secretary, says the NUP party has not sufficiently defended its allegations before the Uganda Human Rights Commission.
It's propaganda. They have filed before in Uganda Human Rights Commission, where they furnished a list of the said torture victims. But after making thorough investigations by Uganda Human Rights Commission, it was found out that the list was fake. So it is political. The actors in that case are seeking for the attention of the international community.
26 top government officials are accused of participating in, aiding and abetting the detention and torture of opposition supporters during Uganda's 2021 election. The ICC has not indicated whether it will take up the case. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization says Unity State has good soil for rice. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
where do you get your health advice from?
Sometimes I get my health advice from my grandmother who is at home. When I'm sick that I can't control myself, she'll help.
I get my health advice from my friend, colleague who live together. We also know about those who have been experiencing more problems about health. They don't advise me through phone. We talk, we chat, discuss everything.
My dad, because my dad is a doctor.
I'd say I get my health advice from various places, the internet, my parents, because I have my mother is a nurse.
My health advice, I get it on the internet. If I need something on how to deal with obesity, I get it on the internet. Anything I need pertaining to health advice is on the internet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Farmers and Unity State officials say flooding and insecurity have increased the risk of food insecurity among communities in the area. Some farmers say they have not been able to produce food over the last 3 years due to the persistent floods. For VOA News, Lich Nyak Jok reports from Bantu, Unity State.
Nyanyespot, a farmer in Unity State who was displaced by a flood in the FIM of Rupkoni County, say flood prevent many farmers from producing food over the past 3 years.
There's nothing eaten by the children. We went to the river and the bush where we were having a lot of problems. When we were displaced by the water, we were not eating anything good that could work in our blood.
But say, even though water has subsided, many households have no agriculture tool. He say many households are waiting for aid agency to provide tool and seed. James Guy Gadwill, a minister of agriculture and forestry in Unity State, admit flood affected crop production, leading to food insecurity in the area.
According to our observation as a ministry, we are seeing them, they are suffering. They have no food. That is the issue of the flooding, because they did not cultivate for almost 3 years. Then they are running up and down to find food. The humanitarians also are busy giving them what is available.
He say humanitarian partners are distributing seed and supporting family with much-needed aid. Fleck Zrumi, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, Deputy Country Director for South Sudan, amid a persistent food and affected crop and displaced thousands of people since 2019. He said the insecurity has impacted on food production.
climate change. It's really been affecting a number of farmers. Number two is the issue of localized conflict leading to displacement of some farmers. It's really affected farming. Number three is the availability of quality seeds, availability of end tools, not just in terms of one or two, but the numbers which enable a household to be able to do a meaningful acreage so that they can be able to produce enough to feed the family and have access wherever possible for sale.
Zrume say to farmers living in the wetland should cultivate rye, which grow well in flat areas. He say UN FAO is supporting the local farmers by distributing seed and tools in Rukoni, Mayom counties, as well as Ruweng administrative area to boost food production. He says Sudan is FAO main market for seed, but the April 15 conflict between Sudan armed forces and FARA military refit support force disrupts supply to farmers. In 2017, UN agency declared for mine to two counties in United States, affecting more than 100,000 households. For BOA News, I'm Lee Nyajua in Bintuna.
Ministers from eight of Africa's Sahel region are meeting in Cameroon to try to end conflicts between farmers and nomadic herders. The ministers say seasonal movement of livestock north from the Sahel is fueling clashes between communities and say a peacekeeping effort is needed. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
African ministers of transboundary transhumans or seasonal movements of livestock say the practice is threatening resources and fueling farmer-herder conflicts. The meeting Wednesday in Yaoundé included ministers from Cameroon, Central African Republic, Chad, Democratic Republic of Congo, Niger, Nigeria, South Sudan, and Sudan. They say in the past 20 years, clashes between the communities in the Sahel region increased from 30 per year to more than 200, with about 800 deaths in the Central African Republic, CAR, alone. The African Union says transboundary pastoralism in the CAR, one of the worst affected, is practiced by herders from Cameroon, Chad, South Sudan, and Sudan. Cameroon's livestock minister, who goes by only one name, Tiger, hosted the second international conference on the issue.
La transhumance est un mode d'élevage, un mode de vie, c'est une technique d'élevage.
Tiger says cattle theft, banditry, robbery, farmer-herder conflicts, pressure on natural resources and intercommunal conflicts, and many other incidents of transhumans activities are not given adequate attention by African governments, international organizations, and communities. The ministers said several thousand civilians displaced by the conflicts were yet to be resettled. Tiger said an immediate task for the eight countries was to establish buffer zones and protect existing corridors to safeguard the livelihoods of 270 million African pastoralists. Kenyan-born Japhet Kasimbu works with the East African Regional Bloc IGAD. Kasimbu says IGAD members, Djibouti, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan and Uganda found ways to reduce clashes.
Our region came up with a protocol on transhumance to regulate, to facilitate cross-border mobility of livestock and herders to access water, to access pasture, even to enable the countries to do joint vaccinations and to promote livestock keeping by pastoral communities.
The three-day Yaoundé conference, which ended Wednesday, is calling for peacekeeping operations to reduce growing conflicts from the pastoralists. German Christian Rook attended the conference for the Congo Basin Forest Partnership, CBPF, one of the founders. He says Africa's Sahel region needs to better police farmers and herders to prevent clashes, but also provide more resources to the communities.
It was a declaration of development and defense, because it's also a security issue. And we want to transfer this declaration to action plans, not only talking. We need water holes, veterinary stations. It has a lot to do with information for the herders. Where is the rain? Where will be the rain? The most important thing is more education for the people to mitigate the consequences of the transhumance.
The conference was initiated in 2022 with support from the Economic Community of Central African States, ACAS, and the Central African Forest Commission, COMIFAC. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
From Yaoundé, we move to Juba, where some South Sudanese female entrepreneurs say the country's economic crisis, characterized by depreciation of the local currency against the U.S. dollar and high commodity prices, has affected their businesses. One successful businesswoman says the sharp decline of the value of the South Sudanese pounds to the U.S. dollar in the parallel markets is pushing her out of business. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
Ancho Aisha Pony has been running the Nubian restaurant situated along Unity Road in Juba since 2019. Pony says many of her regular customers are not able to buy their favorite food due to South Sudan's hyperinflation. She says there are very few South Sudanese who can afford food prices in the capital, Juba.
The money you've collected today cannot even buy for the things for tomorrow. So this is one of the biggest economic challenges we face in the country. And remember, dealing with food that is, you're cooking for people you have not planned, like you don't have an appointment with. You just prepare the food. Then they come and buy whatever they can. So at the end of the day, there's wastage.
The demand for imported goods is high in South Sudan, and entrepreneurs like Sunday Homora, who specialize in the online sales of shoes and bags in the capital, Juba, are about to give up. Homora says the constant exchange rate fluctuation of the local currency to the U.S. dollars has affected her ability to import goods.
We are selling on the current exchange rates, and if you keep the SSP, you're going to experience a lot of losses. So if you cannot juggle between changing the money on that same day, business becomes very tough. Also, another challenge is everything has become too expensive, and because I'm online-based, my clients can no longer afford internet data. And for me, those are a lot of sales lost. When they don't have data, I don't have customers.
Bakery products ranging from bread, cake, and others used to be on the most tables at homes across the capital, Juba, but this is not the case anymore because of the country's economy's hurdles. Traders like Teresa Wakaba, who owns a home-based bakery known as Cakey Master, says the prices of the ingredient for baking cakes have doubled in the market, forcing her to increase her price to make some little profit. Wakaba says her customers have complained about steady price increases, and she fears the situation could soon push her out of business.
The high cost of electricity has resulted in me having an excess or paying more, spending more of my expenses as compared to a couple of months ago. And the more expenses I get, it means that my business is in the end gets less revenue as I would expect it to have.
Aisha, who has been in the restaurant business for a long time, says South Sudanese entrepreneurs should stay in touch and create avenues for discussing their challenges in a bid to encourage fellow traders to stay in business regardless of the country's economic hardships. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you on this Thursday. We now leave you with Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sora.
Yeah.
We've been listening to the Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sora. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Patrick Dyer, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.